Good afternoon. So, last time, we talked about a few features that our command line has that dealt with what files a program you were running would read and write from. Sort of, we're used to the default where when the program uses standard in, it gets the terminal you ran it from, and the same thing for standard out. But we learned that the shell can run programs where that's not the case, where instead it accesses some other file. And I'm using the terminology that on Unix, sort of terminals are files. These pipes and sockets that you've learned about in the past are files, as well as regular files, so-called files on disk. But we can change, and because they're all files, we can change that before we run the program. And we learned about, the OS tracks these sort of open files for every process. On Unix, we just have this sort of array, and we can fill whatever in we want in that array to make the program's output and input go different places without the programs actually changing in any way. The programs don't need to know about this redirection support or these pipelines. They just do what they were normally doing, and they work sort of not using the terminal like they might have originally been written for. And in order to enable this, we saw that we had some sort of special functions for dealing with files. The most notable one was this dupe2, which kind of adjusted our array of pointers to open files to assign one entry to another place. We also learned that maybe kind of non-intuitively, the close operation, it doesn't actually free the resources for that open file. It kind of disconnects you from it. And the resources get freed if no one's using it anymore. But because it only disconnects you from it, kind of like setting it to null in like Java, that means that we can sort of open a file, dupe to it to give it another index in our table of open files, and close the original index, and that doesn't disrupt the copy we made of the pointer to the file. And we learned about one special kind of open file, which were pipes, which are kind of like, they acted like one-way sockets that were kind of pre-connected for you. We had this kind of issue that, in order for these to be useful, we wanted to have two different processes accessing the same pipe. And we can't use the technique we use for regular files, which is that there's a file name and we just both open the same file name. So what we did instead is we would create the pipe in some process and have that pipe open, and because when we spawn new processes, they keep the same set of files by default, we would get the open files to the process that was actually going to use it in that way, by just creating a pipe, spawning some programs that would end up using that pipe. Some questions about these things we covered last time? Okay, so today we're going to start one of our biggest topics for the semester, which is going to be about how that address translation we've talked about earlier actually works. So, as we've mentioned before, and you've seen, our programs have this kind of specific layout in memory that we expect. We have, their code loaded somewhere, followed by what I label as writable data, which is typically like global variables and static variables, followed by a heap that might get expanded by malloc and calloc and related functions. And we have typically a stack where we're going to store our return addresses, our temporary variables, local variables, etc. And traditionally, we have this layout where we put kind of the code and the global variables and the heap at the bottom of memory, and we put the stack at the top of our memory. And if you look at what actually happens on a typical sort of Linux or most OSs these days, we'll actually have some really high part of the memory is going to be used by the OS in some way. So you won't actually use those addresses, but they'll be in use in some way. And I've shown kind of, what Linux used to do is like have a fixed starting point in every program for the code. You might see that that's not always the case today. But we have this sort of fixed mapping that's the same for every program. And if we're running multiple programs at once, we obviously aren't actually loading the program at these same addresses because we have multiple programs loaded at once. It's not possible for them to all have their code at address 40000, but we can load them that way. And that's because we do this address translation, which gives the program the illusion that they have a dedicated memory where they can be assigned whatever addresses make sense to assign to them. And we learned that this is implemented by the OS setting some mapping where basically every time you access memory, and I mean if you're like dereferencing a pointer, if you're pushing to the stack, if you're jumping to an instruction, every time you're using an address in your program to access something, be it code or data, the processor is going to apply this mapping the OS set up before actually accessing memory for real. And that means that you're never going to see the actual addresses in use. We're always going to use these what we call virtual addresses. It's going to be our term for the addresses you use. And those are going to translate to the real addresses, which we will call physical addresses, that are used by the underlying hardware after we sort of go through this OS mapping. So virtual addresses are everything you use in your program. If you're writing code that is not part of the OS, part of the kernel, you are using virtual addresses, not physical addresses. Okay. So questions about sort of the idea of this translation before we talk about specifically the most common form you will see in the mapping and sort of the way this mapping is going to be stored for the processor to use. Yes?
Is the OS mapping virtual addresses to addresses in RAM or persistent memory?
Question, is the OS addressing virtual addresses to addresses in RAM or persistent memory? So these are going to be addresses in basically RAM. In practice, we won't go into the details, like we could have addresses which are accessible to the property like RAM but aren't stored in RAM. But generally, data that's going to be stored on sort of things like hard drives and SSDs is not going to go use this mapping and won't have a physical address. And to, in order to access it, we'll have to talk to a device and have it copy something to something, some place with a physical address, sort of on a, you know, file by file or similar basis. So that the question is, you've learned that when you're consuming a lot of RAM, things tend to slow down. Is this because the OS is using storage that's in something like SSDs, hard drives, that is slower than RAM? It can be. When the OS is doing that, it's doing that not by setting this mapping to point to those locations, but through some other mechanism we will talk about later. That is related, that does use this mapping, but it doesn't work by just saying, the OS can't just point the processor to access the SSD to get your data. It has to do something less direct. I guess another thing I'd say is that when you're using a lot of RAM, that's not the only reason things might slow down, might be using persistent memory to store data. Another reason things might slow down is that it turns out that modern OSs try to use free memory to keep copies of things that are on SSDs, like in regular files, around to avoid accessing SSDs and hard drives all the time. And that's another reason you could have a slowdown, even if all the stuff your programs are accessing actually isn't RAM. Does that answer your question? Yeah?
Yeah, it might be a quite hard question. I want to ask, OS is written in which language?
Of course, the OS is... Is
written by which language?
OS is written by which language? The OS can be written in pretty much any language you like. if your language doesn't compile to assembly, that's going to create some extra challenges, but it's not impossible to write an OS in such languages. I guess a thing which confuses people about this is that there's probably parts of the OS that need to be written in assembly. But if you look at any OS that's kind of used commercially, generally this will be a very small part of the OS, and most of the OS will be written in some other language because, you know, you only really need assembly for things where you have to access special instructions and things like that. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Question, are real addresses always bigger or equal to program addresses? No.
If we have information in program addresses, how can we store it with less memory size?
If we have information in program addresses, how can we store it with less memory size? So a thing that you might notice here is I have a bunch of possible program addresses that are just not mapped to anything. So for that reason, the number of possible virtual addresses can be much larger than the actual space we have for them to map to, because most of them at any time won't map to anything. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Is there virtual registers too? So you mean, is there some similar mapping for registers? Not on any processors I've heard of that's set like by the OS. There is mappings for registers, but not that the OS does. Other questions? Okay. So we're gonna talk about what does this mapping look like, where is it stored over the next few days, and what is it, you know, sort of what things can it be used for, because it turns out it's a little more useful than just implementing this translation. And I'm going to talk about this with sort of a toy-sized example. So I'm going to say we have a program where its addresses, its virtual addresses, the ones that the program uses, are 10 bits. And we're going to say the program has this layout, where the first quarter of its memory is for its code, the second quarter is for its data, like its global variables and its heap. This third quarter is for the heap to expand to if we allocate more stuff, but starts empty. And the last quarter is for its stack. There's the memory layout I've decided, and I've divided up the memory this way. And we're gonna, implement these addresses the program uses using different real physical addresses. And we're gonna do that by assigning these big sections of its virtual addresses to physical addresses. And I'm gonna call these big sections pages. So I'm gonna divide the program's memory up into four fixed size pages. And I'm gonna number them starting with zero. And we'll see why I'm starting with zero in a bit. And when I've chosen these pages, I've deliberately chosen that these pages have a power of two size. In this case, they're 2^8 bytes. And I've deliberately chosen a power of two because that means that in order to figure out the page number, I just divide by 2^8 in this case, which is the same as removing the last 8 bits. So I can look at the upper bits of the address to figure out which virtual page it's in. And that's really convenient because the hardware is going to do that to find out the virtual page, and that's really fast. We don't have to do any division on memory accesses. We're just subsetting the bits the program gives to the processor. And we're going to call, so these upper bits, the virtual page number. And we're going to call the rest of the bits of the address the page offset. And kind of our intuition there is that the beginning of these pages, these chunks of memory, is zero. The end is all ones. And the page offset tells you where we are in that. It ranges from all zeros to all ones. Questions about how I've divided up the program's addresses. Yeah? What were the first two bits? Those are the virtual page number. So So, yes.
How does this relate to like the segments? I was thinking the readings, like segments in the software, like is that used at all for this, or like how do they relate?
How does this relate to segments? We will see later. The biggest thing is that this is going to be a hardware thing, and the segments that the reading talks about are a software thing.
Okay.
And I'm going to be careful about this. The segments that the reading talks about are a software thing. You might hear about some other types of segments that are a hardware thing that we won't be talking about because they're mostly historical. Yeah. The first two are the virtual page number.
The first two are structure 1-1.
Yeah.
So how are the difference between the first and second to know which page?
How are the difference between the which page these two?
Yeah.
These are in the same page, right? One is just at the very end here. One's at the very, very beginning. Because the pages are grouping together lots of addresses. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
This toy program can only have 4 pages, right?
What?
Yeah,
this toy program can only have 4 pages? Yes. Because I've chosen my page size to be 2 to the 8, and I have 2 to the 10 possible addresses, yep, I end up with just 4 pages. On our real systems, sort of the maximum, like my laptop, the maximum number of pages is gonna be like in the billions, but obviously I'm not gonna try to draw that on a slide. So, once we've divided up our program's addresses into these pages, we're going to use this to define that mapping. And in particular, we're going to divide up not just our program's addresses, but also the addresses on the real machine, the physical addresses, into pages of the same size. And in this example, I'm assuming that we have twice as many physical addresses in the system as we have virtual addresses. And in real systems, we could have, you know, half as many or, you know, other sort of ratios. I just arbitrarily chose that we'll have twice as many physical as virtual. And I've divided them up, into the same size chunks. And that's important because we're going to map one virtual page to a physical page. Now, in order to do this, I'm going to, like I did for the virtual pages, sort of the chunks of our program's memory, we're going to divide up our physical addresses into physical pages. And I'm going to number them the same way. And again, because I chose my page size to be a power of 2, I can use the upper bits of the physical address to get the physical page number. So in this case, I have physical pages 0 through 7. And to figure out where the program's data actually gets stored, I'm just going to decide to place each of the virtual pages in one of the physical pages. So this means that if we write something to the beginning of this page, virtual page, it actually goes to the beginning of this physical page. If we write something to the end, goes to the end of this physical page. The whole region gets mapped to, of the program's addresses, gets mapped to that part of the real addresses. And you can see here, I've mapped all the memory that's initially in use, since I said that page number 2, that third of the 4, was empty. And I've drawn this as a picture, but obviously the processor probably doesn't have the OS draw a picture. So instead, we're going to have a table. I've shown sort of one representation of the table. So we just have an entry for each virtual page, saying what the corresponding physical page is, and this is basically the form that that mapping will take. And the OS will just fill in this table and tell the processor about it. And we're going to call this table the page table. Something I'd like to note about how I'm writing this is that this is the data we're actually going to store in the table. We're probably not going to store this stuff for the same reason that when I have an array, if I have an array of 10 things, I don't store the numbers 0 through 9 in addition to those 10 things. I just store the 10 things. And we'll talk in a lot more detail about the format those numbers are really stored in, and we also have an assignment that's all about that. So this is our page table. And so let's talk about how this is actually used. And one thing we're going to have to deal with is that I have none here, and we, you know, that's a nice representation for humans, but for the processor, we probably need something that kind of represents that in a different way. And we can't like use all zeros because that's a real physical page we might want to use. So we're gonna add an extra column when we actually store this called a valid bit. Just saying whether there's anything there. So our non-entry is represented with a valid bit of zero. Everything else has a valid bit of one. And we have a corresponding physical page number, which in this case is 3 bits because we had 0 through 7 we needed to represent. Yes?
Why was that choice made over something like having null, like having it start at 1, for example, and having 0, 0, 0
be? So question, why is this choice made over having it be null? Generally, we're going to have our physical address have a certain size, and we want it to be possible to generate any physical address using a page table entry, using a page table. And using a valid bit lets us do that. Using sort of some sentinel value doesn't. I think that's the primary reason. A secondary reason is that it's probably a little slower to check for a sentinel value than it is to check for 1 bit. So we have this table. How is the processor going to use it? Well, when we're using memory, so we have some instruction that needs to do something with memory, such as fetching the next instruction, or reading a value, or writing a value from memory, we're going to take that address, and we're going to divide it up into our two pieces, our page number, in this case our virtual page number, and our page offset. And we're going to look up the virtual page number in the table, we're going to get the row of the table, and we're going to take the physical page number on there, and we're going to put that at the front of our address, and we're going to keep the page offset the same, because remember, we're mapping this whole big chunk of memory. So if we're in the middle of it in a certain location, we want to be in that same part of the chunk in the physical addresses. And we're going to call this thing we look up a page table entry, which I will sometimes abbreviate as PTE. And we also have this valid bit that tells us if there's anything meaningful there at all, because we don't have any sort of null-like value we can use. And we're going to look at that thing. And if it's 0, meaning that it's not really a valid entry, the processor is going to trigger an exception, ask the OS what to do. This is the sort of thing that you might see the OS turn into a segmentation fault. Okay. Yes? Can the OS or the hardware ignore that valid bit? So the hardware just doesn't ignore the valid bit. If you want the page table entry to do something, not cause an exception, and you're the OS, you need to set the valid bit to 1.
Sorry, I mean, is there an example where the hardware is looking at, is going to be accessing a physical page table that it has marked as invalid because the OS can't access it?
Question, is there a case where the hardware will access a page table entry that it's marked invalid because the OS can't access it? In the scheme we're talking about, the OS sets up these page tables, so it decides exactly what is valid and invalid. And if the OS, you know, sets up a mapping that doesn't make sense, the processor is still going to try to do it. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Question, so if there were less physical addresses than available than virtual addresses, how would that work with the page number? The page number would be shorter. So in this example, this would mean that there would be no way of filling in all our page table entries with distinct physical addresses, which means that either we'd have to have at least, you know, so let's say our page numbers were 1 byte, we either have to have at least 2 invalid virtual pages that don't map to anything, or we'd have to have duplicate mappings. And if we're thinking about this scenario in practice, usually our programs have a lot of invalid mappings, so it's not a big deal. Does that answer your question? And yeah. Question is there no mapping for the offset within the page table? Yes, the offset just gets copied as is. Yeah.
So is there like one page table for each running program then?
Question is there one page table for each running program? That's the, yeah, for our purposes right now, yes. We'll talk about something that makes that more complicated probably next week. Other questions? Yeah.
In this example, you have that the heap is like an invalid region. But what happens, like running the program and you need to out and moving out, how like you something on the heap, like are the page tables dynamic or are they just kind of just set like the program starts running?
So your question is, if we malloc memory, right, shouldn't that change these page tables? How does that happen? So in the cases where we need to give your program more memory, you need to make a system call to have the OS change the page table for you. You won't be able to change it directly because if you could do that, you could also change it to like point to other people's programs or the OS's stuff, which would be bad. So when malloc actually needs more memory, it will make a system call which will change the page table. I'd note that malloc doesn't actually work by asking the OS each time you ask malloc for more memory. Instead, malloc will ask for a larger chunk of memory and divide that up so it can ask the OS less often, which is generally a lot more efficient, especially for small allocations. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so we have our basic size. And something you might get an impression of here is, okay, I talked about taking our addresses from the program, putting them through this page table, so you might say, okay, so our virtual addresses are the size of our pointers. And there's a complication with that, which is that's not how things work on especially 64-bit systems. And the reason for this is that often, especially with 64-bit systems, not all of the pointers you use in your program are used. So, for example, on most x86 64 systems, only 48 bits of the pointer are used, and the other bits just have a fixed value, which happens to be, they have to be a copy of the uppermost bit. And we're going to talk about the size of virtual addresses. And when I'm talking about the size of a virtual address, I mean the number of bits that are actually used for the page table lookup. So on, for example, on my laptop, my pointers are 64 bits, but only 48 bits matter. The others like are just checked that they're consistent with, you know, with the top bit. Nothing else about them matters. They don't actually get looked up in the page table. So. Our virtual address size is the size used for the mapping. Yes?
How does only using 48 bits in the pointer not get super wasteful as you're like running really big programs?
Question, how does using 48 bits for the pointer not get super wasteful? I mean, if you have lots of pointers, yeah, it's wasteful. You could do better. The cost of doing better is, I mean, if you want to optimize your program to store pointers more efficiently, you can do that, and I've heard of programs doing that, but it's actually a lot of work, so most programs don't bother. And usually we actually don't have that many pointers relative to data, so it's usually not a big deal. Another part of it is that it's 48 bits on typical systems, but it's designed so this number can be increased, and in fact, very recent processors allow it to be a little more bits to support larger memory. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Is this because of that like virtual address space versus physical address space that is using the 16 bits?
Question, is this because of that virtual versus physical address space that's using the 16 bits? It's not because the 16 bits are in use. It's primarily, I think, to make the page table simpler. Okay. because having a page table that can deal with looking up a virtual page number that's that big is pretty complicated. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, and sometimes I'm going to talk about the size of address spaces. And when I'm talking about that, I mean the amount of stuff that has an address. So if we have a 32-bit virtual address, meaning 32 bits are used in that address translation process, we have a 2 to the 32 byte virtual address space. There are 2 to the 32 sort of memory locations that theoretically could store a byte that I can name. And if I have a 20-bit physical address, I'm going to say we have a 2 to the 20 byte physical address space. And I'm going on sort of the number of possible addresses, and sort of a thing that makes this a little non-intuitive is that this doesn't always correspond to the number of useful addresses. And a classic example of this is, let's say I have a machine with 3 gigabytes of RAM. If I want to address 3 gigabytes of RAM, I'm going to probably have at least 32 bits to do that. 32 bits would be 2 to the 32 bytes, or 4 gigabytes. So I might have a 4 gigabyte address space, even though not all 4 of those gigabytes obviously are useful on my machine. And very commonly, our physical address space size will be much bigger than the amount of memory we actually have. And that's because, you know, if I have my desktop with 32 gigs of RAM, but hypothetically I could upgrade it to 0.5 terabyte, well, that means the hardware's physical address size supports 0.5 terabyte, even though obviously, you know, I can't use all those addresses when I'm running my MISIS system normally. And when we talk about the physical address space size, we're talking about sort of the possible addresses without regard to whether they actually, you know, map to storage that we can really use. So questions about sort of this distinction between addresses we can kind of give names to versus how much any bytes of those we have versus real storage that's useful. Okay, so let's, so we know sort of the basic of page tables, let's do a bit of counting. So let's say we have 32-bit program addresses, and our pages are 4,096 bytes. This, by the way, is the most common configuration of 32-bit x86 systems. who'd like some more time? Okay, can someone tell me how should I calculate this answer? Back there. So you said 2 to the 32 by 2 to the 12? Yeah. So why does this work? So we have 2 to the 32 bytes in total divided by 2 to the 12 bytes a page, which gives us 2 to the 20 pages. I should. Right, because we're dividing up all the possible bytes that we could address, which is 0, 1, 2, 3, up to 2 to the 32 minus 1. Those are all the bytes that have a unique name, and we're dividing those up into chunks of 2 to the 12. So how many chunks do we have? 2 to the 20. So, which is about a million. So questions, the logic behind this. So let's do, I have things I don't need here. So let's do this exercise. So let's say I have that system and I have 30-bit physical addresses and my page table entries have a physical page number and a valid bit. How big is the page table if it looks like the ones we've seen? Sorry? How many is the number of pages, or what are you asking?
I'm just clarifying.
Question? Each page is this size, and when we do our address translation, it goes from a 32-bit thing with a page number and a page offset to a 30-bit thing with a page number and a page offset. Who'd like some more time? Okay, a few people. Okay, so I'll start by So we have to figure out how big the page table is and look at our page table, and kind of there's two things we want to find out. So one thing is we want to find out kind of how tall is our page table, how many rows are there. And the other thing we want to find out is how wide each of those rows are. So for how many rows there are, we know there's a row for each virtual page, and we just learned there's 2 to the 20 virtual pages. And then we just need to figure out how wide each row is to consolidate that. So we have 2 to the 20 entries times the size of each entry. And we know each entry has a physical page number and a valid bit. So the valid bit is going to take up 1 bit, hopefully. So then the question is, how big is our physical page number? And there's a couple ways we can figure that out. So one way is that I can say, well, our virtual address, which is 32 bits in total, we can divide up into a virtual page number and a page offset. And our physical address is going to be the same way. It's going to be 30 bits in total. And we divide it up into a physical page number and a page offset. So we have that, oh, it's 30 bits in total, therefore, you know, if we know how big the page offset is, we can subtract out that size and we get the physical page number size. And there's kind of two ways we could figure out the page offset from this information. So one way is that we can say, well, if each page is 4,096 bytes, this means our page offsets are 0 through 4,095. And 4,095 is equal to, yeah, 12 ones in base 2. So that requires exactly 12 bits. Or alternately, you know, 4,000 log base 2 of 4,096 is 12, which we have kind of right written there, because we need 12 bits to like determine which of 2 to the 12 values we're referring to. That's one way you could figure out that our page offset happens to be 12 bits. And we subtract the 12 out from our 30, and we find out that the physical page number must be 18 bits. Another way we could find out the page offset size is you could say, oh, we know the virtual page number is 20 bits. We subtract 20 from 32, we get 12. And we could have found it out that way. We also could have figured out the number of physical pages by saying, oh, there are 2 to the 30 physical addresses divided by 2 to the 12 is 2 to the 18. So there are 2 to the 18 physical pages. And we say, well, how big a number do we need to represent one of 2 to the 8 things? 18 bits. Could have gotten our 18-bit physical page numbers that way. So this question had more information than we needed, so there's a bunch of different ways of finding out that 18 physical page number bits. So we have 2 to the 20 entries times 18 plus 1 bits per entry, which gives us about 20 million bits, or, you know, about, you know, a little like 2.5 megabytes. Yes. Question, if I was trying to address something larger than a 30-bit value, is that valid or is that a set fault? So what do you mean by, you mean if I have have an array that's supposed to be more than 2 to the 30 bytes in size, then not all of it could be in my page table at once, okay, referring to distinct addresses. It's possible I could like have all my page table entries point to the same place, in which case that array looks very weird. in that when I modify one part, it modifies some other parts, but that's something the OS is allowed to do. Otherwise, like probably not all of it's valid, at least at once, on this system. Yes? What is the plus one bits per entry? The plus one is handling the valid bit.
Oh.
Other questions? Yeah. It's a question, when I'm multiplying, am I taking 2 to the power of the 18 plus 1? No. It's 18 plus 1 is just a straight number. So if you remember, the motivation here is that 2 to the 20 is the size of our number of rows. And the size of this was 18 bits, not 2 to the 18 or anything. And I'm just, finding the size of the rectangle. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah?
So is the extra bit in the 32-bit addresses, is that just static?
Question is, the extra bits in the 32-bit addresses, I mean the two extra bits, is that just static?
Because you have the 20 for the address in the page, and then you have the 18 for the pages, and the 1 for the valid byte, so it's the extra.
Oh, so the question is, are the extra bits of the 32-bit address versus the 30 useful? Yes, because we don't have to have, because we can set any of the 2 to the 20 pages to point to any of the 2 to the 18 physical pages, right? So we can make the highest address map to something different than than that with the top bit set to 0, for example, because those are different page table entries. Does that answer your question? The only thing that having the smaller number of physical addresses prevents us from doing is that, obviously we either have invalid entries somewhere in our page table, could be anywhere, or we have duplicate mappings, or both. Yeah? Can I explain how I get 12 as the offset? So I think the most straightforward way is our pages are 4,096 bytes, which is 2 to the 12. So my offset's going to range from 0 to 4,095. If 4,096 is 2 to the 12, that means I need 12 bits to represent it. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. Okay, so something I should mention before I move on from this is that this size is actually pretty big, and this is only a 32-bit system. This size would be way higher if we're talking about my laptop. And you might say, how are we storing these page tables? Where are we putting them? We're gonna get into that later. The short answer is that there's gonna be two things we're gonna do to make storing these page tables practical. So one thing is we're not gonna store it in a flat table like we saw earlier. We're going to use some more space-efficient data structure. It's going to turn out we're going to use a tree-based data structure for it. And the second thing is that we're going to store it in memory. And we'll talk about exactly how that works in a lot more detail next week. So let's do another little exercise. Say I have my 4K pages again, 2 to the 12 bytes. Let's split this address into a page number and a page offset. who'd like some more time? Few people? Okay. So how, through, so for this problem, the first thing I'd like to know is how big is our page offset or page number? We don't have any information that's really related to the size of page numbers directly, but we have our page size, which is very related to the page offset size. So the page offset says where in a page are we, so it ranges from 0 to the page size. And we know that it's 2 to the 12, that gives us 12 bits to determine where we are on the page. So we're going to take the bottom 12 bits of this number. And one way we could do this is I could write out this number in binary. No. 0, 1, and so on. I'm not going to do that in this case because we happen to be lucky. And I happen to know that 4 bits correspond to 1 hexadecimal digit, or read it, or whatever you want to call it. So if this is this here is 12 bits. So we can take off the bottom 12 bits by just taking off the 4 last hexadecimal digits. So I get my offset is 0x678, and the rest of the address is 0x12345. If I wasn't lucky enough that my offset was a multiple of 4, then I probably need to do something annoying, like write out my address in binary. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And take the last so many bits. So let's say I had a 13-bit offset. Well, this would be the last 13 bits. And then the rest would be the other bits, which if we had a 13-bit offset instead of 12, that would be our page number. Fortunately, we had 12, so we could do the easy one. So questions on sort of how I got my answer and what we do if things didn't evenly divide up into these groups of 4 bits? Okay, so let's say I have 64-byte pages, which means I have 6-bit page offsets, assuming I can do math when I wrote this slide, and 9-bit virtual addresses. And here's my page table with my virtual page numbers and my physical page numbers. And I have this virtual address. What physical address is that going to translate to? Or is it going to be an exception occurring? And I've written the physical address in both hexadecimal and binary. Oh, the virtual address, sorry. The virtual address in hexadecimal. who'd like some more time? Okay, so as far as approaching this, we're trying to do this, where did I put that slide? This lookup process we saw earlier. So we want to take our virtual address, that's going to be our address from the CPU, we want to divide it up into our page offset piece and our virtual page number piece. So our address is here, and I've written it out in binary, which is going to be very helpful for dividing it up in this case, especially because our page offsets are 6 bits, which isn't, you know, nicely hexadecimal. So I'm going to write out that take 6 bits off the bottom, and this is our page offset. So our page offset is 10100 in base in binary, and our virtual page number is whatever's left over. So our virtual page number happens to be all zeros. Be the zero page. I look that up. I find out that it's valid, so this is not going to cause an exception. And our physical page number we're going to get is this one, which is going to be 010, and that should be in binary. And if we look at what happens, we're going to combine that physical page number and the original page offset to form our final address. So I have my 010, that's our physical page number, and my page offset. Zero, and if I want to write this in a sort of maybe more readable format, I can convert this back to hexadecimal and find out that this is going to be the same as that is a 4. Yes. Question? Okay. So questions on how I did this problem? Yeah?
So we still have to include the zero at the front, right?
I would still have to include the zero at the front? Absolutely not. Okay. Like, if I write 123 or 00123, they're the same number. So I do not have to include the zero at the front. This is a good point to point out, because this is a common point of confusion. Some people really want the answer to be different if I write the original virtual address as 0x24. That's the same address. I just didn't write all the zeros I could write. Right, and that's important in doing this program. You know, adding zeros to the beginning of a number doesn't change the number, and the same thing is true with addresses. They're just numbers. Other questions? So in our last 15 minutes, we're gonna, now that we sort of know the basics of how page table works, we're gonna learn about some things that OSs do with page tables that maybe are, you know, a little beyond sort of what it seems like, you know, they're originally intended for. And some of these are going to require some extra features from our page tables. And we're going to start with that. So one thing that is useful when we're running programs is that, let's say I have two people logged into Portal, and they're both running Vim. And they're running two copies of Vim, which have sort of a similar memory layout. And in particular, they probably have the same code. And it sure would be nice if we could load just one copy of that code. And it seems like, well, we can do that. We can make the page table for MST3K's copy of Vim point to the same pages for that part of memory as the page table for XYZ's copy of Vim. And this almost works, but there's a problem. What if there's some bug in Vim which causes it to crash, and as it's crashing, it overwrites some of that code? If we just share these pages, you know, share this code between the two programs, then suddenly MST3K's Vim crashing causes XYZ's Vim to crash too. That's something we don't want to be possible. And it kind of breaks what we're trying to achieve with processes. Processes are supposed to have sort of independent memory that is unaffected by what the other programs are doing as far as what's in your memory. unless you like actually request it. Yes?
Would that be possible if the OS prevented the user, like the process from editing its own code block?
Would that be possible if the OS prevented the process from editing its own code block? No, and that's exactly what we're going to enable. But you see, the page tables we've looked at so far don't allow that. So what we're going to do is we're going to extend them to support the OS annotating memory in that way. And we're going to add permission bits, so kind of like our file permission bits, but we're going to add them for page tables. And which exact set processors will support varies, but sort of a common set would be that we'll have something about, can this page be accessed in user mode? Can this page be written to? Can this page be read from? And can this page be executed? And whatever set of permission bits we have, the processor is going to check these in addition to the valid bit whenever there's an access. So if you're trying to write, it's not only going to make do the translation and make sure it's valid, it's also going to make sure that it has the writable bit set. And this is going to allow the OS to have these pages be shared between these two copies of Vim, but it can mark them as not editable, meaning that if the program tries to edit its code, like from some bug, it will trigger an exception, and therefore, say, MST3K's copy of Vim will crash, rather than editing any of the code for any other users of Vim. Yeah? Question, is there a page table for each process? Yes. Other questions? Yeah.
So like with new process threads, how does it bind the physical memory with the code that's already loaded?
Question, when a new process starts, how does it bind the physical memory with the code that's already loaded? How does the OS sort of arrange for this to be shared? There's multiple things ways that could happen, but the simplest answer is basically if the OS is loading the program, the OS can track where else it's loaded that program. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
So what happens if the permission for contents, like for the top half of the page is different from the bottom half of the page?
Question, what happens if we want the permission for the top half to be different from the bottom half? So your question is, what if we want, if the code, if the page looks like this, how do we set up these permissions for that? So the most common answer that OSs use is that they just add extra space to make sure that different regions of memory are contained entirely in a page and just waste a little space to do that. If you couldn't do that, probably what you'd do is you'd say, we'll share the parts of the code that fit in whole pages, and you'll get your own copy of the rest. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Does malloc, I think you talked about it earlier, but does malloc add, does the process use another slot of like virtual memory to handle malloc, or how does that?
This question is, how does malloc interact with this? So malloc will sometimes make requests to the OS to add to this space, typically at the end of the heap, but possibly somewhere else.
And so would that be stored on its own table?
Question, would that be stored on its own table? No, it will just be, that would be additional pages that would be allocated to your program.
Okay.
And therefore we'd set page table entries that were previously invalid to point somewhere when they didn't point anywhere before. Does that answer your question? Yeah? Does expanding the region affect the mapping in any way? It just means that we have more valid entries in the page table. Does that answer your question? Yeah?
Why is there one page table per process if the process doesn't actually have its own physical addresses?
Question, why is there one page table per process when each process doesn't have its own physical addresses? So a process has its own physical addresses in the sense that it has the ones the page table points to, and it has in some sense. And there's one per process because we need to supply that page table to the processor for it to run the process's code. And we want each process to run with different memory, so we need a different page table for each one.
Okay.
that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so another usage of this permission. You may notice I have this sort of can I access from user mode bit, and that's something that comes up a lot, actually. And if you notice when I showed my diagram of a program, I had this kind of region at the top labeled used by OS. And most OSs have all the code that deals with system calls and other exceptions loaded all the time while any program is running. And because processors always go through this mapping whenever any code runs, including the OS's code in kernel mode, it needs somewhere to have its code and data. And the typical solution is that it's in every process's page table. There's a virtual address that points to the OS's stuff. It's just marked as only accessible in kernel mode, as not accessible in user mode. So most OS's you'll use will reserve some of the higher addresses for this purpose. So the OS's code will have a mapping there. So when an exception happens, that's where the processor will start running. And when the OS is running, page tables will still be in effect. It's just that the OS will be accessing addresses that you're not allowed to access because the page table says OS only. Questions about kernel-only memory? Question, is this OS code only stored once physically in memory? Generally, yes. So every process will have kind of duplicate page table entries for this. Okay. And so in our past units, let's talk about something about using the page tables in a way that's maybe not intuitive with something I kind of glossed over is I said, when it's invalid, it triggers an exception. And we kind of think of that, that's because we can go out of bounds and crash our program. But that functionality can be used and often is used in sort of a much more constructive way. And as an example, let's think about allocating a stack. When we run our programs, like we just expect there to be a stack. And often, we expect the stack to be able to be very large. Sometimes we're writing a program with like a big recursive function that's going to use lots of space on the stack. But very often we're writing programs that like only need a little bit of space on the stack. And this seems like a bad deal for the OS. That the OS, to be safe, probably needs to allocate you like a megabyte of stack space, because sometimes you're writing that crazy recursive function that goes a million levels deep. But most of the time, you only are like using a couple kilobytes. So we have this situation where, if we're just allocating stack space for that kind of worst case, we have 10 kilobytes in use and a bunch of stuff not in use. But it turns out that we can relatively easily, by taking advantage of how our page tables work and the exceptions that occur when there's no mapping, we can only allocate the stack space when the program actually wants it. And this is, in fact, something that a lot of OSs do. And the way we can think about this is that when we're running the program, we're going to have a page table. And let's say we've allocated some of our stack. So we have page table entries for some of our stack here. And we have our stack pointer pointing, just about to need another page of memory. And that page of memory isn't allocated yet, and we can see that because it's going to be here. It's going to be in virtual page 7FFFB when we push the next thing onto the stack. And that's going to cause an exception because that memory isn't allocated, just like if we were accessing a random pointer. And in particular, we call this type of exception a page fault when we go into a page table and find out that the thing we're accessing isn't valid. So it causes a page fault. And what we naturally think so far is, the way the OS is going to handle this is by turning this into that segmentation fault signal, and probably the program gets killed. But the OS doesn't have to do that. The OS can instead look at this exception and say, okay, what caused this? Oh, the program was trying to access something just before the end of the stack I allocated for it. Well, probably it just wants more stack space. Well, we can give it more stack space. So let's give it more stack space by editing the page table to make that entry that it was trying to use valid, and just go back to rerun, try that instruction again. And this time, it'll work. And in this way, we can only allocate the things the program actually tries to use. Questions? This idea. Yes? Question would only add one at a time? It only needs to add one at a time. It certainly, you could consider adding more at a time for some efficiency reason. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yes? The question is, it's not going to be very time consuming because we're essentially running the same thing twice. So I think the cost of running a push instruction or whatever's accessing the new stack space twice is pretty small because we aren't even completely running it. But there is a pretty significant cost in that we're calling a function in the OS and doing a bunch of lookups to figure out, you know, whether this is a good memory access or a bad one. That's where most of the cost is. So there is this is probably slower than allocating the space in advance if we knew it was going to be used. Would it not be more efficient if we allocate a whole bunch every single time? Maybe. I would say there's another reason that OSs do this, and that's that even though this might take more time, we're trading off starting the program earlier for and kind of delaying the loading of the program. So even if it takes more time, this is time after the program has started doing useful stuff. And so often that time is kind of invisible, especially the programs like reading input files and things like that. Does that answer your question? Okay, so we'll talk more about sort of extensions of this allocating space on demand idea next time. And then talk about page table layouts.